Welcome to your audio tour guide to the highlights of the Port Museum and Founders Heritage Park. We will refer to the site numbers on the Port Museum tour map. Download your map from www.nelsoncitycouncil.co.nz. This tour is one of a series of heritage walks developed by Nelson City Council to encourage understanding and enjoyment of Nelson's rich history. The Port Museum is found at Founders Heritage Park, an historic village developed by the community on 5 hectares of land close to Nelson's central city. Local businesses assisted in the construction of historic replica buildings and the donation of original buildings. An extensive historic collection of up to 20,000 items was also donated by Nelson residents, leading to the opening of Founders Heritage Park to the public in 1986. The park celebrates Nelson's stories, with a particular focus on the period 1880 to 1930. Amongst the character buildings and interactive displays, Founders Heritage Park has its own working railway, resident artists, organic brewery and cafe. The Port Museum is proud to feature amongst its exhibits part of the remarkable Captain Ricketts collection. Included are more than 320 bottles, each containing a rigged ship inside, some as many as 3 ships, and carboys in which 15 fully rigged ships are assembled. The museum gives an excellent overview of Nelson's maritime history using a selection of model boat varieties that frequented the region's coastlines and also some relics of the past. Shipping was once our primary transport mode and key to the development of Nelson into the established city it is today. The normal opening hours of the park are 10 to 4:30 p.m. daily. The walk is undercover and flat. Our tour starts at the Information Centre in Miller's Acre. Make your way on foot or by car to Founders Heritage Park by travelling up Trafalgar Street to the State Highway and turn right. Pedestrians should follow the dual cycle walkway, which is well signposted. Drivers, turn off at the State Highway at Atterfy Drive. Bear right past Miatsu Gardens and the Whakatūmarae until you reach the large windmill that marks the entry to Founders Heritage Park. Ample car parking is available. Some entry charges to the park may be applicable. The park hosts some major festivals annually, which can sometimes affect access to park exhibits. Please ring Founders Heritage Park on 548 2649 for details, or check their website www.founderspark.co.nz. Inside the park, follow Everett Street ahead of you, past the red phone boxes. Turn left into Snodgrass Avenue, then right into Page Place. Cross the railway line at the crossing ahead and walk towards the rear of the park. A large plane is to your right, and the museum's 2 buildings are adjacent to a small pond, affectionately known as Lake Howie. Enter the closest building, named the Port Nelson Exhibition. Use the first entry door, and you will find yourself in the small theatre, number 1 on your map. Sit down and enjoy a good introduction to Nelson's maritime history in the film showing here, which covers the history of Port Nelson from 1841 to 1980. It describes the making of the Cut in 1906, a man-made passage between the Boulder Bank and Horlashaw Island to ease entry to the port. The Boulder Bank is 13 kilometres long and is a natural breakwater sheltering Nelson Haven. This naturally protected harbour spurred the New Zealand Company in 1842 to select this as the site for settlement of Nelson. In the early days, ships entered the harbour around Horlashaw Island. But by the 1890s, changes in river flows had created Tohunanui Beach and contributed to the old entrance silting up. As ships became larger and trade increased, frustration was growing. In January 1904, the Lutonworth was one of the last ships to run aground on the rocky approach to the harbour. "Unless something was done," reported the newspaper The Colonist, "Nelson faced not merely stagnation, but ruin." The Nelson Harbour Board was formed, and a government loan raised, and work began on making the cut. Sand and boulders were dredged to create the shipping channel, and the cut was opened on the 30th of July 1906. The Union Company ferry, Rotu'iti, did the honours, sailing through the ribbons of Graham Tartan that honoured Harbour Board Chairman John Graham. 800 people packed the decks, paying a sixpenny donation to the local hospital to be on board for the short trip in and out of the cut. The film goes on to cover how the port has gone from strength to strength with the growth of the region. Walk into the next room. Number 2 on your map is directly in front of you. The model, Awaroa, is at the back of a varied display. The Awaroa was a 71-foot, 59-ton topsail schooner built by David Gilbertson in 1875 for Captain James Cross of Nelson. It was named after the site it was built at, in Golden Bay, and was the largest vessel to be built there. Awaroa was one of the earliest sites in the region for shipbuilding, and the surrounding land provided a significant resource of suitable timber, attracting several boat builders. Amongst these were Ambrose Ricketts in 1855 and David Gilbertson from Scotland in 1865. Continue past the dinghy to reach the glass cabinet containing the relics from the Edwin Fox, which are found at number 3 on your map. The centrepiece of this display is a section of the ship's wheel. The Edwin Fox had a long and varied history after being built in India in 1853 as a Moulamein trader, commissioned by the East Indian Company. She was built in just 9 months using teak and sawl timber. After her maiden voyage to London via the Cape of Good Hope, she was purchased by Duncan Dunbar and was immediately put into service with the British government as a troop ship for the Crimean War. It was said that she carried such illustrious passengers as Florence Nightingale. After the fall of Sebastopol, the Edwin Fox was refitted out to carry civilian passengers and general cargo and made her first voyage to the Southern Ocean to Melbourne in 1856. Between 1858 and 1872, Edwin Fox was used primarily for two purposes: to sail between England and the East as a trader, carrying a range of cargoes, including prisoners to Fremantle in Western Australia, and several trips to India carrying a pale ale, earning her the nickname of the Booze Barge. In 1863, the Edwin Fox was sold to Gallaty, Hankey and Company of London, and then in 1873, the Edwin Fox was chartered by the Shaw Saville Company and made 4 voyages to New Zealand, carrying a total of 751 passengers to the new colony. A number of incidents around this period have been recorded in the ship's log. On the first voyage, she ran into a storm in the Bay of Biscay and was severely damaged. The ship's crew got into some of the spirits being carried as a cargo and created a significant amount of turmoil. The ship's doctor was killed, having been impaled on a metal rod. A seaman was killed trying to secure one of the ship's boats, and a young girl was swept overboard, only to be swept back on board again by the next wave. There were many other incidents on subsequent voyages. In the 1880s, the Edward Fox was fitted out as a floating freezer hulk and was used to carry frozen sheep meat between several South Island ports. She was finally towed to Picton, arriving on the 12th of January 1897, where she has remained ever since, initially as a freezer ship, later as a coal hulk, and now preserved undercover as a prominent tourist attraction. A well-used ablution cabinet, or commode, is number 4 on your map and is tucked into the corner junction of the glass cabinets. Janey Seddon was one of two submarine mine-laying vessels bought out from England in 1903. She was based in Wellington, and her twin, the Lady Roberts, was based in Auckland. She was used in port during both World Wars and was an examination vessel during World War II. About 1936, Janey Seddon was purchased by Talley's Fisheries as their first trawler vessel. But she was too big for the job. In 2006, she had become a rusting hulk on the Motueka foreshore near Talley's headquarters. Look upwards to see number 5 on your map, which extends over the cabinets. This splendidly painted figurehead once led the way on the bow of the ship Messenger, wrecked off Farewell Spit in 1879, and she is now on watch high on the museum wall. A figurehead embodied the spirit of a ship and was originally believed to placate the gods of the sea and ensure a safe voyage. Almost every sailing boat prow had a carved figure looking down at the waves, and the variety was immense. The following abridged account of the wreck of the Messenger gives some idea of the challenges of life aboard a sailing ship. On the fateful Friday, 19th of September, 1879, the weather looked dirty. The Messenger was going to tack offshore, but the wind kept shifting, so they kept on their course, laying along the shore. Around 9 p.m, they realised they had passed the lighthouse by nearly 5 miles, where they were meant to change course. They tried unsuccessfully to turn the ship around. Remember, with a sailing ship, manoeuvring can be very difficult, especially with changeable winds. The anchor was let go in about 4 fathoms of water, and the ship swung as she bumped on the sand. They then paid out the chain to 60 fathoms and slipped the cable to let the vessel run right upon the sands for safety. The ship then became fixed, but rolled and bumped heavily, being almost on her beam ends. Whilst aground, her masts and yards were shaking and threatening to come down, and as the tide was ebbing, it was thought advisable for the crew to leave in the boats before they were damaged, for there was heavy surf on the beach. The first boat to leave was under the command of the two chief mates, and it also contained the steward, one apprentice, and 6 hands, and it was provisioned with 1 bag of biscuits and 1 gallon of water. On leaving the ship's side, they waited for the second boat containing the captain, the second mate, carpenter, cook, and 7 hands. This boat had 1 gallon of water and a piece of raw beef. The men in either boat had on very little clothing, for they had stripped ready for swimming, and it was raining heavily. The captain was the last man to leave the vessel. Then both boats made out to sea. Rounding the spit, they went into the southeast of the light from the lighthouse. The two boats got separated in the dark, and the captain's boat landed further up the bay, towards Pakawal, closer to the lighthouse. The mate's boat pulled over the mudflats, and afterwards they dragged their boat 2 or 3 miles towards the lighthouse, and they got ashore at 5 o'clock, after being 8 hours in the boat, and walked to the lighthouse where they received a kind reception by the lighthouse keepers. They were cold and very hungry, but all thankful to be reunited and alive. Continue around the dinghy in the centre of this area, past the glass cabinet with the exhibition of the Blind Bay Hookers. This was the name given to Nelson's fleet of small sea-going craft of cutters or schooners between 1 and 20 tons who worked in the Tasman Bay area. Head towards the back of the building following the walkway. In the corner is item 6 on your map. It is a life-sized representation of a slab hut interior scene and references Nelson's first European settlers. The lone inhabitant looks pretty comfortable by the standards of the day. The raupo mat on the floor and kete are evidence of trade with Maori, without whom the early settlers would have starved. Perhaps he is cheering himself playing a jolly sea shanty on his squeeze box or button accordion. Past the attractive seascape on the back wall featuring Arrow Rock and the harbour entry, the artist depicts the time before settlers carved the road along the rocks and made the cut in the boulder bank, creating Horlishore Island. Arrow Rock was later renamed Fifeshire Rock after the untimely wreck of the Fifeshire on the 27th of February 1842. The wreck occurred as she was leaving Nelson Harbour after successfully delivering 142 new immigrants to Nelson. The combination of light winds failing and an ebb tide resulted in the vessel foundering on the rock. At the exit, notice the early drawings of John Waring Saxton as you exit the building through the rope curtain. Follow the external pathway by the water's edge, leading to the second building called the Maritime Building. This holds a significant display of model ships and bottles from the Captain R.J. Ricketts family. The Ricketts family have a proud history linked to shipping in Nelson, starting with Ambrose Ricketts, who was an early boat builder in Awaroa. Later, Ricketts family members ran a shipping firm for 40 years in competition with the Lady Barclay. For 35 years, the late Mr. Russell Ricketts spent every available waking minute working on model ships to add to an ever-growing collection. The collection had about 2,000 individual pieces and was passed on to his son, Captain Bill Ricketts, who cared for and added to what is a unique seafaring collection in New Zealand. Number 7 on your map is an antique carboy, which is an extra large glass container originally used in the manufacture of alcohol. Inside it is a miniature replica of a view of Nelson Harbour in the 1880s, created by John Turner. He has done this on 2 levels. The circular structure sitting to the right of the upper level was the old saltwater baths. Today, the layout of the port has changed dramatically to cope with larger container vessels and the log trade. Nearby, we have the scale models created by local artist Peter Raggett of the Lord Auckland and the Fifeshire. two migrant ships and a group of four that headed for Nelson in 1841. Alongside the Lord Auckland and Fifeshire was the small brig Lloyds, with the wives and children of the men sent in earlier ships, and the Mary Ann. The Lord Auckland is number 8 on your map. It was a bark that had been built at Calcutta in India in 1836 for Messrs. Brown and Co. of London, and was commanded by Captain Jardine. This ship arrived in Nelson with immigrants from London on the 26th of February 1842, and one of the passengers, J. Barnicote, made several drawings of the ship during the voyage. If you want to find out more about who was on board these early ships, you can search passenger lists of immigrant ships on the Nelson City Council database containing early settlers' voyage details. If you visit Wakefield Quay, which was the site of the early landings of these ships, a beautiful wall records the passengers who disembarked from these early ships. On the voyage of the Lord Auckland to Nelson, the ship had on board 171 passengers, 42 crew, 18 sheep, 18 pigs, numerous geese, ducks and chickens for food, and 95 tons of fresh water. Two deck plans exist, one giving immigrants allotted personal areas on the ship, which were not large when you consider her actual size was only 114 feet long, 29.5 feet wide, and a depth of 21.5 feet. Go to the model of the Fifeshire, number 9 on your map, and see some sketches of life on board ship. Each family had a small curtained sleeping area where husband, wife and children slept together, and they even had to get dressed in this area. A communal space with a long table was where you ate. See the rations chart. Not a varied or particularly nutritious diet for the long voyage. It was unlikely much washing occurred either, as you had a tiny and precious allocation of water daily. Another model of note created by Raggett is the Matora, number 10 on your map. The Matora was built in Glasgow in 1868 and purchased by the New Zealand Shipping Company in 1874. A fully rigged ship of 853 tons, she was fitted with the Harkins patent dry air refrigerator and used to successfully transport frozen meat to England in 1882. The meat from the young colony arrived at its destination in excellent condition, to everyone's delight. The Matora transported 216 immigrants to New Zealand in 1875, some of which were bound for Nelson. It sounds as if it was an anxious voyage. At latitude 44 degrees south, a large number of icebergs were encountered. More fascinating details of her history can be found on the New Zealand Electronic Text Centre site. The model Mavis, number 11 on your map, was created by John Turner, who died in 1931, and would have been familiar with steamers like this, which were used locally in the ports from the 1890s. See the chart behind you on the wall, number 12 on your map, which shows Tasman Bay, with all the main ports, harbours and bays, where ships would load and unload cargo. There are many more interesting items to discover in our museum, including displays of rare coral, nautical flags and knot crafts. Before you exit the door you came in, please pause and find Nelson's namesake represented in the museum through D.N. Frost's model of the Victory, complemented by a bust of Lord Nelson, which is found at number 13 on your map. We have now completed our tour. Retrace your steps and return to the windmill and exit the park, or pause and have some refreshments at the cafe and enjoy other displays within Founders Heritage Park. We hope you have enjoyed the Port Museum Highlights Tour. More heritage information about heritage walks and events can be found on www.nelsoncitycouncil.co.nz. Images and stories of the Nelson region, plus other podcasts for walks, are found on the Prowl website at www.theprowl.org.nz. For more information, contact the Arts and Heritage Advisor at Nelson City Council.